For March the 9th, 2018, we talk about Into the Breach, the Diablo on Switch rumors, and we ask you which games remind you most of elementary school. Welcome to Level 233. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And I'm realizing right about now that we need to do more stuff. And we realize we do an awful lot. But like normally I have like a hot new thing to billboard at the front. But not for the past couple episodes. It's been real dry.
I got a hot new thing.
Oh, you got a hot new thing. Hey, Ben, go.
But it's a hot new thing that me and Dennis are going to talk about later.
Oh, okay. I mean, is it a game that you guys have been playing?
It is a game.
Oh, okay. Do you want to get more?
That game, if it's the one that Steam tells me about...
All of my Steam friends are playing this game, so...
Yeah, it needs to freaking release on Mac.
I assume that you're talking about Into the Breach, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I need to get
this. I was talking about Farmville 3. Sorry, I was confused.
Oh, wow.
Let's skip the other sections. Let's just jump straight to the grind.
How long has it been since a Farmville dunk?
I have no idea.
I'm not putting
it's
you
always on, warranted.
I'm not putting you on blast for stale dunks. However, I'm going to have to ask you real quick, is there a new Farmville?
No, not okay. Probably somewhere. That thing is the Zynga or whatever is like a machine, like Cube, the horror movie Cube style that just gets produced and no one really knows why or how anymore.
Right.
So I imagine it's got to be like churning
just like
still,
the Cube movies.
Yeah.
The
Cube is an amazing takedown of Cube movies.
Yeah. Also, is Zynga still a company?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought they're all joined like the PopCap empire.
Huh. I don't know.
I wish. I love those PopCap games. Back in the OG PopCap days.
Yeah, your insane aquariums and stuff. Mm. Yeah. No. But yeah, I'm curious to hear about Into the Breach. That's what we call billboarding. That's what we call saying right up front, hey, this is what you can expect later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's like inverse burying the lead
a little bit.
Here's one for you in terms of I guess still technically a game. I did my first poker night with some people in the neighborhood in forever.
Okay.
Over the weekend, and I forgot how much fun that is.
Is this your first post because you recently moved to this neighborhood? Is this your first mm-hmm. poker night with this neighborhood?
Yes, with this group.
Okay.
And everyone was super cool. There was one guy that I'm on the fence about, but I think everyone was on the fence about him, so it was kind of a bonding for the rest of us moment. it was a great time. People were super friendly, and the final like hand of the night was like a casino royale style, like hitting these crazy hands all in a row. One person was like, "You can't, I got you, ha!" And no one was like, "No, I've got better." And then somehow a third person still had a better hand, and so that was.
And then someone gets shanked.
Yeah.
Somebody cries blood. Yeah.
Yeah,
you can't bond as neighbors until you have a group murder.
nothing bonds you like hiding a body.
Mm.
But I did all right for myself. I walked away in the black, which you're always happy to do.
Ooh.
And like I said, I played poker a little bit in high school, a little bit in college, and then not really since.
Yeah.
So it was fun to kind of come back to it.
Yeah, all of us went through high school and maybe even early college, right in kind of the height of the Texas Hold'em poker craze,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's all I'd ever played. And then we did a round of Omaha last time, which is just like Texas Hold'em, only you've got four cards in your hand, and you have to use two of your four cards. and that was phenomenal. Like, yeah. I that was what I did the best at. That's what I enjoyed the most, because then all of the ending hands are like these crazy combinations because you've got four cards to work with.
Yeah.
We were back to Hold'em by that final hand I mentioned, but it was a good time.
So for as long as I've been alive and even longer, my family on my dad's side, when they get together for holidays, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas specifically, play poker for pennies, right? And you know, just you bring your pennies. Yep, hold up your little container. Like, yep, I got my pennies, and then you just sit and play poker for about 2 hours or so. Fun, except we always play the same two games.
Oh no!
it's always seven cards, and then it just all that changes is what's wild. Is it follow the queen, or is it low hole? And and just like, okay, well, which one are you gonna do? Like, there's never a third option. At one point, somebody who married into the family, you know, they got around to him. It was his dealer. I've been seeing his dealer's choice, and let's play hold'em. And everybody looked at him, like, especially the older family members, like, what the fuck are you talking about? But hold'em. He had to explain Texas hold'em. And I'm like, okay, I can hang. But, like, it is ridiculous that we've been playing the same two games for 40 years.
See, I think people need to bring back, like, Faro or, like, one of the super old card games.
It'll come around. Everything is going to have its time. So
yep.
I don't know. It's been... what, like 200 years?
everything will have its day once more. Time is a flat circle.
Yep.
I didn't mean to go there, but I went there.
I was going to say, you know, once the world is burnt apart in a nuclear holocaust and, you know, society rebuilds, that'll be the first thing reinvented.
Yeah. So anybody else have any stories over the past week or so? All right. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you. We got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. Why don't we get started with the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see. Dennis, what is Blizzard doing?
Yeah, well, it's more about what people think Blizzard is doing.
Again, they on this. Last week, yeah. it was that Warcraft 3 HD remake. Now they're saying, well, go ahead.
I think it's the 20th anniversary of StarCraft, I think. And so just like all of Blizzard is going nuts, and yeah, they're doing special things. All it's like, that is the excuse for them to just party hardy on everything. Mm-hmm. So this is just a tweet that they sent out. And when I saw it the first time, I took it as a bit of fan art. Like, there is a Diablo nightlight that starts out on, and then someone reaches in and switches it off, and then does that a couple times. And then rewind, play that back, start editing out. There's a Diablo nightlight that starts on, and then people switch it off. Diablo on switch. Diablo on switch. Oh my God. And everyone freaked out. So they were hoping, everyone called it. People were just in an absolute uproar. Blizzard stepped in and said, hey guys, yeah, we're not that clever guys.
Yeah, but that's
they actually
what
brought
they said.
Out Diablo to deny it. People made the assumption that this meant Diablo was coming to Switch.
Uh-huh.
But they said very upfront, guys, we're not that clever. We're not working on anything, which is exactly what you would say if you were working on something.
Oh, exactly. You know, all that humility, that's just sandbagging, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, definitely.
It's crafty bastards.
Hey, I mean, the greatest, the greatest trick that Diablo ever pulled was convincing the world they didn't exist, right? Hey, it wasn't coming to Switch.
Kaboom.
I literally cannot talk about this story anymore. That is too good of a quote.
No, that's pretty good. I'm really happy that you identified that gap and ran for it, David.
Yep.
That was fantastic.
Kudos, my friend. But, like, was there any specificity about what people thought was going to happen? Because, like, would they be putting Diablo 1 on, or would they do a Diablo 3 port? Makes more sense to me.
See, I would love to see.
If I had a Switch.
Yeah. I would love to play Diablo 1 again, and I would especially love to, if they did, like, like the remakes that people are doing, where they kind of, you know, updated some of it, but, kept it to the, you know, traditional feel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I would play the hell out of that.
Yeah. Man, I need to look and see, because I forget. I think Diablo was 1997 or 1996, so we're already past the 20 years on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, people pointed out that, you know, StarCraft did come out on N64.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two Blizzard Game Boy games, although I'm not sure exactly what was on them.
Probably like Lost Vikings.
And Blackthorn, I think, right? Or something like that.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, huh. That's it. So, also a Rock and Roll Racing. So that gem.
Oh, yeah.
So anything's possible. People are certainly hoping that it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's a win for the Switch. I'm happy to see that console doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not holding my breath for it.
Yeah. We'll see. It'd be a real shot in the arm for that. I mean, not that it needs a shot in the arm, but like, oh, a PC publisher is all of a sudden paying attention to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it says something that so many people are so excited to buy a game that is already on so many systems.
Like, well, especially, I don't know, I haven't been to a GameStop recently. Is it still like obligatory to have at least one D2 battle chest?
I don't know.
Oh, I've like, never not seen one.
Yeah, because like this isn't the weird thing is this is a game that like if you own a computer, you can that if you own a Windows computer, you can probably run it. Like,
no. Yeah.
There's not really anything keeping people from playing this.
Yeah. No, there's a D2 battle chest and it's still $60. That's what pisses me off.
Man, those things were a real pain to shelf. The battle chest.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Like that you couldn't bookshelf them. You had to like have them sit there facing out, which is you know good product design for getting like you know frontage, but not for you know making the stalker's life easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were good deals though. I got StarCraft in the battle chest.
Oh, cool.
I don't know why I said that like I was a 4-year-old. Yeah. I got StarCraft in the battle chest.
It's taking you back to that time. More billboarding for what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. I've got one. This is a story about the new game that is going to be coming out from Cyan Studios. Cyan, the developer that did Myst initially.
Mm-hmm.
They did the first two Myst games, then Myst 5, and then recently Abduction. And then mm-hmm. now they have put out a pretty cinematic teaser trailer for a game called Firmament.
Huh.
And there's not an awful lot by way of news. There's no release window. There's no there's no hint of like what systems they're planning for. They are saying that it will be developed for with VR in mind, though. So,
which Abduction was as well, right?
I don't know if it was designed. They added VR pretty quick after it came out. So I wonder if that was them that was them trying it out and seeing the way that it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looks pretty cool. You know, you watch the trailer and like, yep, this really looks like Cyan. I just would love to see, and I'm sure I can get one of these, but just a big book of like Cyan concept art, because the way they design buildings and landscapes, is some of my favorite art in games. And it's good to see them, continuing with that in spades. Looks see, like a story.
I feel like, are we certain this isn't Bioshock 3?
I don't know. I wouldn't want Cyan to make a Bioshock game. I would like Cyan to continue doing what they do well.
So are they still like, are they still pretty much the, I don't know, same DNA from Myst or whatever? Like this isn't a company that's been like bought by EA and like stripped for its branding or anything like that?
No, so the Myst name that was bought by Ubisoft, and I'm not sure actually who has it now. I also can't remember if Ubisoft published Myst 5, because that was the last one they were brought in to develop. But Cyan, as far as I know, is still at least one of the Miller brothers, either Rand or Robin. I think maybe Robin left, but if you look at Abduction, like it was developed by like you know. You see Rand Miller, and he's in the FMV and stuff.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm down for it. All that it does is make me really, and I mean, I need to finish Abduction. That was a good game that I just did what I always do, and I played like a third of it and I put it down. So
that's right. You come back to it and finish it all in one 40-hour sitting next, right?
Right. Yeah. So go check out that that trailer. I think it looks cool. I saw it and I was like, fuck yeah. So. Let's see. David, what's going on with Qbert?
Sure. So, Cuber, basically a team of researchers unleashed a evolutionary AI on Cuber, which ranks up there for most ridiculous way the apocalypse could start. But they noticed that in the ultimately fully evolved form of Cubertbot, instead of actually playing the game, Cubert would beat the first level and then proceed to jump around randomly and gain 1,000,000 points.
Okay.
And apparently the AI had found some obscure bug in the port of Cubert that allowed it to just get an arbitrary amount of points.
Just by jumping around in certain patterns or timings?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It sounds like they're not quite sure like what it is that's wrong with the code that like, you know, where the bug is in the game. But just kind of a interesting way it played out or whatever.
Right. So they were probably selecting for just score as opposed to progression, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So that's exactly. That's how they just ran it generation after generation and then found out that
So
well, everybody's a speedrunner now. How about that?
No, it sounds like this is definitively not speedrunning. If you're if you got to jump around random. Oh well, I guess it didn't say how long did it have to jump around randomly before it caught the bug.
Well, apparently that's the thing, is it's a it can just apparently get as many points as once indefinitely, but the way they worked it is it was, I don't know if it's an hour, but say an hour. The AI had like an hour to get as far as possible or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually there's a cutoff.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But presumably it could have gone indefinitely.
But yeah, I'm watching a GIF of it. Or not a GIF, this is just like a YouTube video. And honestly, what it looks like, so he does clear out the level, the first level. He gets rid of all the enemies and puts all in one color, and then it looks like he just like has a little party to celebrate, like it's just like it's just like, oh, everybody disco dance because now it's time to rack up the points. Like this guy, he's a showboater is what he is. You know, I guess I look at that and I think, hey, you know, who's the real machine here?
So I actually had one other small one. And unfortunately I this got posted to Hacker News, but I haven't been able to find any actual content, but it's still pretty neat. Someone made a procedural chiptune video game music generator.
Huh.
And it's actually pretty good. And that's basically all there is to it. You can click on it and listen to some chiptunes. The person, I couldn't find a like README file or... you know, any like, here's what I was going to. So
yeah,
some people just want to see the world beep boop.
Yeah. Huh. I'd be very curious if you find a link to that. Let me know, because I want to.
Yeah, it's actually right before my actual article.
Ah, okay.
It seems like it goes in about like a 5 second, 10 second snippet and then automatically changes, and it'll give a key, and then some of them have a style. So I've seen Japanese, I've seen blues, I've seen augmented. I don't know what that is. But yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. Different instrumentation. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these supposed like computer makes art things, I feel like it's more like computer makes random shit and humans have a spectacular ability to find patterns in random phenomenon.
Yeah, to transpose onto it, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas this one, like, I mean, Grant, depending on your philosophy, maybe the computer is or is not creating music, but it at least I think legitimately sounds like what it's supposed to sound like or whatever.
Right, right. I have to imagine that in the past, like demo scene programmers and stuff like that have done some kind of procedural generation for melody.
I read a lot. I think Spore, when it came out, had like a very advanced procedural music generator, and I read a lot of interviews with the guy who created that. because it's based on something he'd been working on for a while. And apparently that was really, really good.
Yeah.
His favorite story, I forget the song, but was that they had it running as they were setting up for like a convention to like show off the track. And then for like, you know, a non insignificant period of time, like 10 seconds or, you know, 15 seconds, it played the like exact copy of a really popular song. And it just so happened that it had like run into it.
Monkeys and Typewriters.
And yep, then, yep. You know, digital millennium copyright, you know, Hitman descended from the skylights and took everyone out.
See, like, so whenever there's a news story about this kind of thing, right? Like, oh, somebody wrote a program that would write music or, you know, generate visual art, stuff like that. Like, it's always like, well, eat shit, Mozart. Guess who's coming to replace you? So like I fired this up and I was, you know, listening to it as it went. I was like, if I was more musically minded, I could see like putting this on and then just like listening for ideas or little melody lits. Like most of it is atonal, but like, oh, just like, oh, like look into the sea of static for a hook. Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a bad idea at all. So writing prompts for the musically inclined.
Yeah.
I think my favorite though, like procedural music thing, even though the music itself isn't procedural, is still like Left 4 Dead 2's way it would like mix up the tracks based on like context and, you know, what enemies are nearby and things like that.
Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus does that too. Dynamic mix. Oh,
yeah, I was gonna say dynamic versus procedural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Well, I'll put a link to this in the show notes so people can listen to bleeps and bloops. Hey Ben, you got a story?
I do not have a story this week.
Attaboy.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked them to get in touch with their inner child, which means thinking about what game do you most associate with your grade school years. And as a follow-up, did that game have an impact on the way you interact with other games now?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and do this. I'll pick up with Sam, who writes, I play plenty of stuff like Mario and Sonic, but I'd have to give it to Wrath of the Black Manta on NES for teaching me the joy of figuring out incomprehensible systems. The ninja magic in that game is absolutely necessary for fighting the late-game bosses, and powering it up requires finding secret rooms that you enter by shooting specific unmarked walls multiple times in specific positions. It truly was the Dark Souls of ninja platformers, with localizations full of plagiarized art.
Now here I thought Neo was the Dark Souls of ninja platformers.
Yeah. There's not a lot of platforming in it, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
I didn't mean to like just take a shit on
that. That'll show it.
That's right, Neo. Go away. you're ninja guiding at best. No, that's Neo's fine. It just wasn't for me. Yeah, we did Wrath of the Black Manta for Abject Suffering, but with that show, you never get far enough to really engage with this particular stuff. Yeah. Ben, what does Juan say?
Juan says, Jet Force Gemini and Pokemon Stadium 2 for N64. They taught me to approach most games as a completionist. Spent the majority of a winter looking for the final spaceship part for the true ending. Every level combed over meticulously, all while saving remaining cute koala tribals and exploding ant heads with magnificent rainbow blood.
So I was about to say, oh, Juan's a youngin', but then I realized somebody who was in elementary school when, oh gosh.
Jet Force Gemini?
Yeah, during the N64 years. About our age, but probably a little younger, definitely has a car payment, maybe a house payment. So I'm sorry for being diminutive, Juan.
how did that never get a sequel? That seems like, I mean, that was a game that seems like it was pretty ready made for being a franchise.
I think that Rare just got caught up with other stuff. I think that they went right from that to doing what is it? No, this was after. I don't know.
Is Rare even in business anymore?
They're making the pirate game that just came out.
Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
Yeah. But they did the rare replay. Like, Microsoft bought them, and their output kind of slowed down. But also, their output wasn't very good by that time anyway. They did Cameo, and that was about it. Grabbed by the ghoulies. David, what does John say?
John says, probably the original Commander Keen trilogy. It was one of the first games I had access to at home. I don't think it had an especially specific effect on my relationship to games, but it did cement my love of the pogo stick.
Yeah. Commander Keen and Wolfenstein 3D were my two favorite, my two first PC games.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
I feel like in the final apocalyptic showdown, the two sides are going to be like pogo stickers versus grappling hookers.
I mean, grappling hook is going to win, but pogo sticks will put up a good fight.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean,
come on.
All right, and we're done.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis. What does Jack say?
Jack says, one game that immediately comes to mind is Castlevania. All three NES iterations hold a huge place in my heart. The introduction to the series to the first game punished an 8-year-old me. The drastic difference in gameplay in Simon's Quest was further befuddling and introduced me to the concept of strategy guides. Dracula's Curse, to top it off, was the first video game that got me in actual trouble. I loved playing through this game and did so repeatedly once I actually owned it and was no longer renting it every other week from the video store. I stayed up after bedtime, snuck downstairs before school, and generally monopolized the TV, switching between Trevor, Sypha, Grant, and Alucard play after play. My parents got so fed up with my obsession that they confiscated the game from me for 3 months or the remainder of the school year. Luckily, my friend next door also owned the game, and I gladly loaned him my Mega Man cartridge to further feed my mania.
The old Konami Capcom swap.
Yep. And the water's going to flow downhill. You're going to find what you like.
I'm deeply disappointed. I first read this as Simon's Quest introducing him to the concept of strategy games, and I was really hoping there was an RTS Castlevania game.
Oh. Let's see. Greg writes, the strongest association I have with games in grade school years are JRPGs. I played them when they were new. Dragon Warrior I played when I was 11, Final Fantasy when I was 14. They taught me that video games can have good stories and require patience and notes, how important music is in games, and that you don't need fast reflexes or shooting skill to do well in them. Plus, I had the time back then to play them. Looks over at untouched Final Fantasy 15 that's been sitting there for over a year.
Oh, no.
That last part was a stage direction, just so people can picture it in their heads.
You know, I still have a problem to this day. I cannot be left alone in a silent room or the overworld music to Dragon Warrior just comes back to haunt me. You know, the doctors say it's the weirdest form of tinnitus they've ever seen.
just chasing after you, haunts you. Nice. Hey Ben, what does Andrew say?
Andrew says, in the Christmas of 1988, I was 10 years old and going through monumental changes in life. I had moved with my mom and stepdad to Florida, leaving lots of friends and family behind in Michigan. Luckily, that year, my parents got me an NES with a power pad. They also got me Jaws, which was a bad game, but one I had fondness for. The most memorable game of that period was Dragon Warrior. Hey, I think it was when Nintendo Power was giving them away. It was the perfect game for my indoor kid lifestyle. It started my love of JRPGs and continued for years into adulthood. These days, I only have a couple hours a week to game, so I can't dedicate time to RPGs like I used to. Maybe someday I can pick them back up.
Hmm. Yeah. It can happen. Yeah.
I think Andrew's little side note after that is worth mentioning as well. He points out that when he got a Genesis, his mom took the NES and started playing, and she actually discovered a kill screen in Jaws, where if you keep collecting power-ups but don't find the shark, eventually the game breaks.
Nice.
So, go figure.
We're exposing all these 80s bugs this episode.
Yeah. That's fun. The Jaws game for NES is underrated. I think it's a little bit, it's like it's a little bit like the Friday the 13th game. I thought
wasn't there one of the Jaws games that's supposed to be like known as one of the worst games of all time or something?
I don't know. It's
that was E.T.
Probably E.T.
Yeah.
Same director.
Okay, maybe it's E.T.
Spielberg. The Hook game isn't that great either. There's not a great there is not a great track record for Spielberg games. Except for Boom Blocks. Boom Blocks is actually good. Okay, come on. let's see. So that was you, Ben?
For yes. Andrew?
Okay. Hey David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie said grade school is primary school, like 5 to 11 years old.
Yes.
So I'm going to work on that assumption anyways.
So I'm going to butt in real quick. There was a discussion of this in the Slack because someone was like, you know, is that like K to 6 or like 1 to 8 or whatever? And so we decided that grade school for these purposes was defined as the period between when you're old enough to play games and when you're just horny all the time. That's grade school.
Yeah. Continue.
Sorry. Yes. My family got an Amigo 500, a floppy-based PC/game system. And the game I remember most from that era is New Zealand Story.
Hmm.
It helped me develop a love of platformers. I also want to give a shout-out to Turrican. What a game with an amazing soundtrack. The first time I'd come across a game with music I loved.
I'm very happy that people were paying attention to music in these games.
Yeah,
I just always remember the like completely nonsense heads up display in Turrican. That's the one I'm thinking of, right? Where you have like a sniper rifle bolted to your forehead.
I don't know.
The kickback would be very painful.
Wait, let me check this.
Yeah, you only get to fire one shot.
You gotta really want that kill.
First level is you fire the one shot. The next level is somebody taking care of you because you're paralyzed. I don't know. I can't say I've ever played Turrican, so I can't I can't help you.
Guys, I can't get over this New Zealand Story game. You play as a chick with a bow and arrow that shoots snails and anthropomorphic hot dogs, it looks like. Oh, now the chick has bombs. Yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah. When you say chick, you're not talking about like a sexy lady.
Sorry,
you're talking
about chicken baby.
Yeah, like a little chicklet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about a piece of gum.
Yeah, he's wearing sneakers. It's very cute, actually.
There's a lot going on in this game.
It's not cute.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at a video here. It's an exceedingly cute game. However, one of the background sprites, it's against a yellow brick wall. Written in what appears to be either blood or feces is the words "help me."
Yes, I was about to call that out.
So I think there's something sinister going on here, guys.
Yeah, well, at the beginning it seemed like a walrus maybe captured all the chicks. So yeah. One twisted walrus.
Huh.
As a side note, the game I was thinking of was MDK.
Oh, yeah. MDK. That was fun.
That is an accurate a game with a crazy heads-up display where you have a sniper rifle bolted to your forehead.
MDK 2 was good. That was a BioWare game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was on Dreamcast. Yeah. No, I'm happy to hear about this. Happy to hear about different. Ollie is Irish, I think. He's from not here, but an English speaking not here. What? That's accurate.
So I see the world.
Yeah. So Dennis, what does Graham say?
Graham says, thinking back to my early gaming career before I played my first JRPG or strategy game is weird. It was the early to mid 90s, and I was playing a lot of SNES games and a lot of DOS stuff, shareware usually. While as time would go on, I'd find new games that were similar to those early SNES titles, but my experiences with a lot of DOS shareware are very unique to that era. Excuse me. There were a lot of DOS sharewares back then, but if I had to choose one, I'd pick Monster Bash, that Halloween and horror themed DOS platformer where you save puppies. Huh.
Hmm.
So DOS shareware, is that just like Napster for games, or was it truly like people were making their own games?
Wouldn't that be like Commander Keen and like Hexen and stuff?
I think like extended demos, like the way that you played like Commander Keen or like Wolfenstein and even like up to Quake was either your system would come with it or you would get it free with something else. Floppy disk had like the first level or the first handful of levels, and then you would either make a call and order by phone or mail off for the full game.
Got it.
So the translation was people only played the first level.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Apparently you save the puppies by shooting them with a slingshot. That doesn't send the right message.
It motivates them.
Yeah, and for a game where the main character is a kid in a red hat and pajamas that looks very very cartoony, there's a lot of like blood in the background. Interesting.
What is with these cute cartoony games turning out to be super dark?
Yeah.
Let's see. I'll pick us up here with Tim, who says, I was so ridiculously obsessed with the Mortal Kombat games back in the 90s. I can still remember the fever pitch excitement 10-year-old me had on Mortal Monday, September 13th, 1993. Excitedly coming home to play my brown sweat version of MK1 on the SNES. And it only got worse with MK2 and 3. I'd memorized all the special moves and every variety of ality. referring to fatality, babality, animality, friendship, etc. I memorized all of those by heart. And was even one of those special fighting game nerds who learned as much as he could about the story of the game. I've fallen off since, but childhood in video games for me equated to Mortal Kombat for sure.
Interesting.
I always associate Mortal Kombat. Like my dad and I, my brother, we would go to go shopping, and we go to like a department store called Hills, and the Hills had an MK machine up at the front of it, and like we would spend all of our time there at that. We'd always play. So Mortal Kombat is always associated with my dad from that era.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's still my dad. It's not like I get a new dad every 10 years.
Man, that time travel.
good stuff. Ben, what does Tim say?
Tim says, Final Fantasy III US release for NES or SNES. I blew 96 hours in sixth grade playing it over spring break. My parents thought I had went camping. Nope, just in the basement.
That can only happen in 1995. Not mean 1995 or before. Like, where's our kid?
What's the show? Damn it, Stranger Things, hiding Ellen.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's like the entire plot.
Yeah. Also, it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I know I always ask this, but which one was Final Fantasy III?
That was the one that starts off with the mechs walking through the snow.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, we had that discussion the other time. It was like, how far could you get in that game just by mashing the X button?
Okay.
And I actually started trying to do that. So got to the first save point, no problem.
Okay.
Just any combat, mindlessly mashing the X button. I'll let you know where it gets to.
Okay. Yeah.
See, eventually that becomes the thing in that game, because it's like, how quickly can you navigate each character's completely different, you know, attack menus to get to the, you know, one move that's the most powerful.
Except for the characters who have you do, like you have charge attacks and also, well, no, I mean, all of those are, okay, so in your version of the rules, are you not allowed to remap what's at the top? Like, does it have to always be attack?
I'm going to guess yes. I'm playing it on the Vita.
Okay.
And I don't know where the remapping options are. So I've literally just mashed X. So I haven't targeted attacks or anything like that. It's just literally whoever the cursor goes over.
Oh, fun. Please don't lift the veil up and reveal to me that those games are not actually games.
If you never hear about it again, Cole, you'll know. Deep down inside, you'll know. Even though I don't tell you.
We just need to unleash an AI upon it.
David, what does Eliyahu? I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name.
Yeah, Eliyahu's and the same. I'm says, as a kid, I remember playing games like Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter. But somehow, when I was in elementary school, I found myself playing the quirky but amazing Parappa the Rapper. I struggled with the game for hours, even days, trying to understand the odd timing of the button commands, while also grooving with the amazing music. Eventually, I became a master of rhythm. Shout out to my all my teachers, like Chop Chop Master Onion and Prince Flea Swallow.
And I definitely read game. That Flesh Swallow. It's a very different game.
Well, now. And completed the game over and over again. I recently bought the PS4 remaster, and sadly, I have not retained much of that former mastery. But the game has kept its charm and joy. That being said, Prepper not only was and is a joyous gaming experience, but also introduced me to the world of hip-hop, which I love today due in part to the funky beats and rhymes of this strange work of art. I still believe when I load up Prepper, and here is affirmative, I've gotta believe. Maybe this experience, with its challenge and charm, prepared me for the bleaker, you died, screens of souls, which define many of the past few years of my gaming life.
What is life but the arc from I Gotta Believe to You Died?
That's dark. I appreciate it. Good.
Yeah, this is a game I really need to. Is it available in any like GOG form or anything?
The PS4 remaster that he mentioned is like $20.
No,
it's that's fine. It was a big deal when it released. Yeah, it still is charming. Still as charming. Dennis, what does Lindsay say? Let's power through these last ones.
Yeah, Lindsay says, I spent many years with Mario World and GoldenEye. These days I don't really play shooters often, but I still play Super Mario World, though. I play more RPGs now, and currently it's Monster Hunter World, Star Ocean 5, and God Eaters. So I changed big time, because I wouldn't dare play any RPGs when I was young, mainly due to the harsh fact that I could not read well then. So it was hard for me to get into.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll pick up here with Jonathan, who writes, there were quite a few. Boulder Dash, a Scooby-Doo Mansion game, Death Race, and Airwolf. But I'm picking an obscure one, Octopolis, a spaceflight game that with two screens to watch at once for two different axes. Once you land, It became a platformer that was pretty challenging as a kid. It made me feel like I was playing Star Wars. I feel like I've heard of this, like maybe like as an offhand thing on like a Retronauts. Oh, it's like a Commodore 64 game. That's why I'd never played it or heard of it. Neat. Oh, wow. It really is like a split. Like he's not lying. It is split screen up and down, is controlled on a, like from a side view on the upper half. And then left and right is from a top view on the bottom half. That seems very confusing.
Oh man. Yeah. Yikes.
That seems like it'd be like an art fuck kind of game that you would have nowadays, like in an indie scene. Ben, what does Chris go ahead?
I was gonna say someone challenged the developer to make a game that was more difficult to navigate than Descent.
See. Ben, what does Christopher say?
Chris says, my love for horror adventure games can probably be traced back to the almighty Shadowgate, which I played.
Oh no, I was just ooming in the affirmative.
which I played and died at over and over again as a kid. Also, that low torch music scares the poop out of me.
Still scares the poop out of them. Yeah, that is a pro answer. Yeah, Shadowgate's good. I need to go back and replay the remake. Never finished that. Surprise.
Isn't that like Dragon Slayer style or something?
No.
Like it's a decision game?
It's like a first-person adventure game kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like any of those. Like it was part of like a trilogy of games that were all done. I think they're developed by ICOM, I think. And they're considered altogether to be the Mac Venture series. It was that, Uninvited, which is like a Lovecraft kind of thing, and Deja Vu, which is like a hard-boiled detective story. Yep, and they came to NES with really good music. Rounding us out here, who was that? Who read that? That was Ben.
Yep.
Yeah. David, round us out with David.
David says, Final Fantasy VI. I remember waking up early before school to play. My parents always had a bedtime for me, but I discovered the loophole that they didn't regulate what time I woke up.
That is brilliant. I wish I had that kind of willpower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I really wish there were more hours in the day. Yeah, they're the ones before you wake up.
I did maybe a week getting up early to play games when No Man's Sky came out. Uh-huh. And that was just really surreal because, like, I think I was more prone to being half asleep while playing in the morning than I was at night. And it's all like weird alien landscapes.
Wow.
But I couldn't keep
that
up.
That is one
I
of the most depressing things I've ever heard.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe I'll phrase it another way. It's not that I like sleep too much. It's I hate.
Oh, no, I meant that getting up early to play No Man's Sky.
No, it was good. It like it fit the vibe of just like the surrealness of the early morning.
Yeah, the derealization. Yeah. So I'll do mine. It's going to be very similar to a lot of what everybody said, but both Super Mario RPG and Final Fantasy IV, you know, were my introduction to playing role playing games, introduction to playing narrative heavy games. And weirdly enough, this is kind of weird. Final Fantasy IV got me used to overcoming fear in games because the first time fought one of the four fiends and that music popped up and he was surrounded by zombies and he was a big mammoth monster kind of thing. I'm talking mm-hmm. about Mylon, the second form of him. It was real. It's like that. I pictured that thing being in my closet. So it'd be those SNES RPGs. Surprising, absolutely no one. Ben, how about you? What do you associate with your elementary school days?
I think mostly playing N64 multiplayer games with friends, so like playing GoldenEye, and then maybe even like PlayStation 1 stuff. We played a lot of like Grand Theft Auto, the first game as a kid on like Friday and Saturday nights. So mm-hmm. yeah, mostly just the social aspect of those types of games.
Nice. Mm-hmm. David.
It's been mentioned a couple of times, but I think for me, probably Dragon Warrior. Mm-hmm. Both in terms of, I don't know, that is a big influence on me for like, I don't know, that was one of my like game that you know, spurred a lot of like imagination and pretend and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, in terms of how it's affected you, one of the weird things is just that was at least one of them, maybe the only one that they did a lot of localization on. So like all of the art isn't the normal like Japanese Akira Toriyama stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough because in a lot of ways, I still kind of prefer that. Like I still find that the new version or new old version of the series a little alienating. And I also kind of miss the ye olde English for all the dialogue.
Yeah, they abandoned that, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
So
neat. And then Dennis, round us out.
So for me, it was any one of like the big name PlayStation 1 platformers. So Crash or Spyro. Especially Spyro, because when I got that game, I actually got it from a friend before I owned a PS1. Mm. I knew I was getting one. And so I had the game and memorized the instruction manual for the game backwards and forwards and just pored over it for weeks until I got my PlayStation 1, which then the impact is that to this day, I'm a fan of a good instruction manual. So that one definitely had its kind of hand in the way I think about games.
Nice. And that paved the way for you to be like really into Jack. When the PS2
came
out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That one, gosh, was that? I guess I have to look at the date. That was either grade school or like early high school. I think it was still grade school.
It's 2001, I think. So that would have been, I would have been in eighth grade. You would have been in eighth grade as well.
Yep. Yeah. So right on that cusp for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All good stuff.
Neat. Yeah. So I want to direct the assembled panel's attention to the level backstage channel where I did post the screen cap from New Zealand story, so you could see the "help me" written in the background, just so we're all on the same page with that cursed
yes.
image.
Yes.
Are you going to try and vote on whether it's blood or feces?
Blood or feces.
Well, and it's apparently like the chicken that's being kidnapped that's calling for help, yeah. right?
It's, so it's, yeah, he's been there. He's trapped by the snails. thank you, everybody. If you want to participate in these, I guess like the page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and watch for when they go up on Monday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis and Jala.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Normally, I throw it to the person who wasn't here last week, but I will let the two of you decide who's going to go first, because Dennis and Ben, it seems like you both have been playing Into the Breach. So mm-hmm. you guys just sort it out yourself, but I want to hear about Into the Breach first.
Yeah, you want to tag team this, Ben?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, yeah. So Into the Breach is a newer game out by Subset Games, who are the people who did FTL. Mm-hmm. And it is very, very different in terms of the actual mechanics of the game, but the feel of it, I would say, is very similar. So it all takes place in a series of 8x8 grids. It's a turn-based tactics game. And the thing that makes it very unique is the turn sequencing. So versus a standard format of like, I take my turn, you take your turn, and we go back and forth, what happens is the enemy moves but doesn't attack. You then move and attack, then the enemy attacks. Mm-hmm. And that format means that usually the enemy is not necessarily going for you. They're trying to go for like the civilian buildings around you. So they move into position to wreak all kinds of havoc. And then your turn is about how to move or manipulate or kill them to prevent that damage. And then that damage happens. And if you've managed to kind of, you can almost, I think, every attack that I've played with so far pushes or moves the enemy in some capacity. So you're never just dealing damage. You always at least have the option to move them around the board as well. They don't take very much damage. Your attacks aren't very powerful to start, but they'll take extra damage if you like knock them into each other or knock them into a mountain. And I guess that's also worth mentioning is like the scale of the game. These are like giant building sized mechs versus mountain sized bugs. And this brawl is playing out. So it's got a real Pacific Rim vibe going for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think one other important thing is in addition to the attacks being telegraphed, the spawn points are telegraphed as well for where the next batch of bugs are coming in. And you can, if you stand on it, your mechs stand on it, you can prevent them from coming in, but you take a point of damage. Or if you can get the enemy bugs to push them over on top of it, then not only will they take a point of damage, but then they'll prevent another round of bugs coming out from that spot.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's balanced to where if you're
squished.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you're not doing that on some level, either, you know, knocking bugs into each other to kill them or positioning them to attack each other or, you know, or positioning them over a spawn point, you're going to be overrun. Like you cannot just straight attack them to win. Mm-hmm. You have to get these kind of combos in order to just stay in the game. So mm-hmm. It's just a really, something as simple as just shifting the turn order slightly creates a game that just plays very different from anything else that I've seen. And that's a ton of fun.
It feels kind of similar to the board game Robo Rally, where you pick all your moves for your robot to go and then everybody's executes at the same time. And so things are in different places so you can make a really nice plan, but then it could fall apart with other interactions.
It's like a frozen synapse kind of deal.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, so you, like you said, Ben, like it telegraphs where all the enemies are going to come in. You can actually mouse over an icon that shows you not just what's going to happen, but the order it's going to happen in. So the order mm-hmm. that the enemies are going to attack, which helps you plan where to try to position them. Yeah. There's no randomness to the damage.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah, one additional element is some of the maps will have events. So similar in FTL, how there's like solar flare map or whatever, or like an electric cloud map or something like that. They have maps where it's like, here's a thunderstorm map where lightning will just randomly hit these hexes, but we'll tell you where they're going to be, you know, ahead of time. Or here's a tidal wave map where hexes will randomly turn into water tiles, like in a progression across the map.
Yeah.
You always have perfect information for the next turn.
That is amazing to
me. Which I like a lot.
I think that is, I like a turn-based strategy game, but for as much as my planning, you know, for as much as you plan, there is still that element of randomness, which in a lot of ways can be the appeal of the battle. But the idea that the game is paced in such a way that you're able to consider any number of alternatives as you are putting your stuff out, and it actually presents that to you, that seems like a really smart move to get new people into the genre.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking, because like where XCOM, of course, is my point of comparison, whereas XCOM is like planning for a turn is this branching tree of if-then scenarios, because you don't know what you're going to get. FTL, everything is completely certain, but I think there's a lot more complexity and nuance to what happens within that certainty.
When you say FTL, you mean Into the Breach?
Yeah, that thing, you know. The other interesting thing is, though, like, even though there's so much information given to you about what's going to happen, I am routinely running across rules questions that are not well explained.
Okay.
And that almost feels like it's adding an element of randomness to it. So like, your robot will catch on fire, and it's like, okay, that's going to do a point of damage at the end of the turn, which is going to kill me. I think if it runs through water, that should put out the fire, but I'm not sure if I just need to run through it or if I actually need to stop in the water to put it out. And which answer that is, like, the answer to that question completely changes how I play this turn. That actually happened to me. Another one that actually happened to me was there was a bug with a passive that made every other bug explode when it dies, dealing damage to everything around it. And so killing it, like, I wanted to kill it by knocking another bug into it, and which would have killed both of them, quote unquote, at the same time. If I killed it with the passive in effect, it would have killed a civilian building as well. However, if I left the bug up, it was still going to kill a building. There was a third, if I could set them both on fire, and I correctly guessed this one, if I could set them both on fire, the fire damage, even though it shows that it hits all at once, ticks sequentially across bugs based on when they spawn. And so it wound up, because the passive bug spawned earlier, that died first, which got rid of the explosion, and then the second one died and did not hurt the building. I completely lucked into that. And it's such a new game that hasn't been figured out yet,
right, or you haven't run into that.
This shit yet. Super interesting.
Tell me about how the way the game looks, because I'm looking at a video of it and it looks goddamn gorgeous to me, but I want to know how that translates into play.
To me, it looked off-putting to me when I first saw it, because I did not know that this was a game from the people who made FTL.
Okay.
I originally heard about this game because everyone on my Steam's list, all my friends were playing it. And so it's like, I would watch a couple of people play it. I'm like, okay, this is kind of like a weird, like 8-bit-ish, like indie strategy game, I guess. But like, it looks kind of goofy, you know, like, and so I had like no idea. And then I like looked up information about the game. I'm like, oh, it's from the people who made FTL. I'm going to get that. Like, okay, it makes sense now.
So it's like an isometric pixel art kind of deal. And yeah, it works. So the animation is incredibly limited. Like, the characters do not animate at all as they move across the map. They just move. I think the most animated thing is like when someone shoots a web around a building or a character that animates.
They have like idle animations too. Like they've got a wobble on them as they're shifting weight.
Very, very slight. So it's not completely still, but this was a game where they kind of knew what they wanted to focus on. They knew what people were going to gravitate to and what makes it great. And I don't think they wasted any time on graphics that weren't going to do that, if that makes any sense.
The fact that it's an 8x8 grid, does that make it feel very hemmed in? Or is that dense enough with kind of possibility that you don't feel like it? You know, you're basically trying to have a a fight in an elevator.
So I think it varies map to map, because there's like some maps where it's like kind of like a C shape for like land. Mm-hmm. And so you have to like kind of go around if you want to like hit the enemies. And so those can feel like very corridory. But then other maps, it's like completely open and it feels like very spacious.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a more normal map where there aren't huge areas sectioned off, 8x8 feels gigantic.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how much room to roam and possibility space is on. I mean, anyone who's played chess is going to be laughing at me right now.
Right.
But how much possibility space is on an 8x8 grid.
Yeah.
Is there, like, a storyline or kind of what's the, I don't there, know, thing of
yeah,
it?
Yeah. The small 5-minute pitch, I guess, is, like, the idea is there's aliens. They invaded and killed Earth. You are time travelers. And so you are trying to prevent this from happening, but you're constantly like failing and losing, and you have to like go jump into another time dimension or something like this to try and save them again.
Or into the breach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They call it time breaches. And so that's where the name of the game comes from.
Is that how they explain how you know what's going to happen next in a particular fight? Is that narratively justified?
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, that's
not explicitly, but that makes a ton of sense. I hadn't thought about it that way. Yeah, that would make a ton of sense. that's really cool. That is my headcanon now.
It's pretty funny though with the game over screen, because it'll say like I hope you're actually a time traveler. You better get out of here, because like everyone's gonna die now.
Yeah.
And then each time you go back, you can keep one pilot, so there's only one pilot you can send back, and you will acquire pilots over the course of the game, which are better than the mechs being piloted by AI, because they have, each pilot has special abilities. Mm-hmm. And you pick one set of special abilities to take back with you. And then you get to choose kind of what squad of mechs to work with, and there are I think 8 different mech squads that are organized.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones I've played with, there's like a base level, just, you know, they shoot and those shots move people. And there's not too much more to it than that. Then the second squad I played with was all about fire and lighting things on fire and pushing people then into that fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, has been interesting. I don't know what else is out there, Ben. Have you played other squads yet?
I have only played the first squad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's crazy, because think about like how much depth you've gotten out of that, and then think like times 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool.
I,
very, very akin to FTO with the different types of ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd listened to people talk about this basically all week since it came out, and I had never looked at any footage. I wanted to save that for when I was talking to you guys, because I saw you playing it. And looking at it, I'm kind of struck that like it all fits on one screen. Like there's no massive, like you're, you know, scrolling around to see what's happening everywhere. Like everything is presented just, you know, on one static screen that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, and like I said, it doesn't that makes it sound claustrophobic, and it is not in any way, shape, or form
right
claustrophobic.
It's like you're looking down at a little diorama.
Yep. I mean, when your move speed is, or when the number of tiles you can move is like 3 most of the time, 3 or 4, that it feels like a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's crowded with, you know, stuff to do and things popping up and all kinds of craziness.
Yeah
comparing it to a chessboard is actually pretty apt, because it's like you're basically just managing a bunch of different possibilities, and you're trying to figure out like what's the best permutation of what I can do here to set me up best for the next round.
Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing is, so you, at the beginning of the game, you select an island, and each island has, I think, let's see, how many would it be? 4 + 2 + 1. So, 7 territories, of which you can only, or maybe it's 8 territories, and you can only get to 5 before you have to leave the island.
Mm-hmm.
You can go through up to 4 islands. However, after the second island, the final mission unlocks.
Oh.
And it tells you that the final mission will scale in difficulty to how many islands you have visited. So it's like it'll be the same difficult if you've done 2 islands as you have if you've done 3, and right, you're getting upgrades and everything as you
doesn't
go.
Doesn't that kind of undermine it?
Yeah, it's super. So I just, my second time around, I've gotten to the final, or I chose to go to the final island after the second island, And I've not actually played the mission yet, though. So I'm very curious about that. There is objectively, like, every time you play an additional island or map within territory within that island, you save more people. And you have a running counter of the number of people you have saved. So I think it could boil down to just a high score kind of thing, which is once you can kind of consistently beat the game after two islands, you can then challenge yourself to go to island 3 and island 4 to get a higher score of people saved.
So that's actually the one thing from the reviews that I've kind of wondered is it seems like the game could kind of have a longevity issue just because that honestly sounds kind of dull.
Yeah, it's not the most motivating thing. I think what's exciting for me is unlocking and playing with new squads. So I want to be able to beat the game consistently with each squad. And then you unlock a random option where rather than building a squad of three set things, which are always, or three set mechs, which are always complementary, it'll just grab three. And you might get three mechs that can only attack at super long range. Good luck. or what have you. That's a really fun idea to me. So that's where I think I'll be counting on my longevity versus necessarily being motivated by min-maxing that, you know, civilian saved score.
I think it's very similar to FTL where it's all about the run. Like if you have fun on the run, then that's the point of the game.
Yeah.
Although like FTL, it took a long time to beat it, right? Like I know at least for me, it's like, I'm generally I beat the game and then I'm done with the game.
Yeah.
Like,
FTL actually was designed to go over and over again. Yeah.
I'm running at about an hour an island. Ben, I don't know if that's similar for you.
I actually just picked up the game today so I can look at how much I've played it for 4 hours and I've done about like maybe two or three runs on it. So yeah, that's probably about similar.
Two or three full runs like through the final island or two or three missions.
So I've gone to the third island two times, and then I've gotten wrecked on the third island two times. So. Wow,
you play so much faster than I do. That's hilarious.
We've established that you like to chew your food.
This is very true. I am recording and posting every time I play it, which is it's just worked out that I've been able to do that, and I'm going to try to keep that up so everyone can go and see how slow I play if they want on YouTube.
Yeah, how long to beat is showing a median of 4 hours for the main story.
For like, yeah, for a successful run, but not talking about how many run-ups you would need to make.
For main story plus extras, they're showing 6 hours.
Right.
Oh, wow. Main story. Oh, so that'd be like a single run where you did all four islands, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no way you're getting everything to see in this game in 6 hours.
There's another aspect of the places that you choose to fight in the islands. Each place has like a certain reward that you can get from it. So it'll either be like stars, these reputation stars, which you can like trade in for like upgrades or things like this once you beat the island, or it's power, which is kind of like the health bar that you have, where it's like the island's amount of power source. So every time a bug deals any amount of damage to any building, your health bar basically goes down. Your power bar or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Your run's health bar.
There's kind of a weird thing, and I don't know what this affects, but after you fill up, because when you start the game, it's like halfway filled or something like that, or two thirds of the way filled. After you like beat enough things of the island, you fill it up completely full, and then you can get more power or whatever, but it just ups your defense percentage, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that affects though.
Oh, I do.
Okay, there's, what is that?
Anytime a bug attacks a building, there is a percentage chance that the building will not take damage. And I think base level is like 15% or 10% or something like that. When you have a full power grid and get more power, that power instead goes towards percentage points of building defense, essentially.
So your building has a dodge score?
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. So in my two runs, I've gotten it pumped up to around like 25 or so.
Uh-huh.
And that is life-saving. in the later levels, because I definitely too on the third line or third island got to a point where I just was I was going to have to take some damage.
Mm-hmm.
And taking mechs taking damage isn't a big deal. Like that's in fact like an economy that you kind of have to manage,
because
Their health resets every like match or every 8x8 grid.
Even if they're completely killed, their health resets. Like you get that mech back next mission. However, you
lose the pilot.
The pilot is killed. If you've got an AI piloted mech, it's really no great loss as long as it helps you win the mission.
Yeah.
That seems like the safety mechanisms maybe have their priorities backwards. that's why I don't want the AI driving our cars. I'm worried about what decision they'll make.
Yeah.
And then I think another thing to point out is on each map there's random like secondary objectives that you have. So your primary objective, the primary objective is always usually pretty interesting and varied. It might be like, I think one of my favorite ones is defend a train, where it's a train that starts on one side of the map, and each turn it moves two spaces like across the map, or moves a single space, something like that, two spaces across the map. And so you have to kind of follow along with it, and you have to make sure you have to make sure it doesn't run into any bugs on the track. So you have to like clear the next few spaces that round, and you have to do this, you know, consecutive rounds, and you have to make sure that like your paths aren't cut off, you know, so like if I have a mech here and then the train moves forward and now I can't get out with my mech, then that can be a huge disadvantage.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So for the both of you, I mean, you both like XCOM an awful lot, you know, does this scratch a similar itch for you? Like just comparing the two, sorry, I need to compose my sentence here. Comparing the two, one is incredibly like, you know, broad in scope and very intricate in terms of, you know, the ongoing story that comes to pass as you're managing the threat across the world, basically. Whereas this feels very kind of like focused and confined and compact. Like, which of those do you prefer?
Oh, man.
I think it's too early to tell for me since I've only played it for 4 hours, but it definitely just feels like a more like board gamey slash mathy version than XCOM, the fact that, as mentioned, you have perfect information in this situation. So it's all just thinking of different permutations for how to best solve the problem. Yeah. Whereas XCOM is very probabilistic and very statistic based, where it's like, this will probably be the best option. And I don't know. Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. So if you're going to make me choose one, I'm going to choose XCOM because XCOM for life, right? But if you look at my habits playing these games, you're totally right. XCOM is much, much like bigger and broader and everything takes longer than in Into the Breach. But when I sit down and play XCOM, I play for about a half hour at a time. And I'm doing like a single mission, right? Mm-hmm. When I sit down and play Into the Breach, each mission is significantly shorter, about three times shorter, but I'm playing for an hour at a time. And that's an interesting like dichotomy there, where I like off the bat, like a just gut level reaction, I would say, oh yeah, Into the Breach is way more bite-sized. But that's not how I play it. Like I've been binging it much more than XCOM, which could just be that, you know, time spent with the game and this is the new shiny. So we'll see where things even out.
Right.
It definitely has the same feeling as FTL, where it's permanent, like bad news. If you have one bad 8x8 grid or whatever, that affects like your entire run. And so that, and you, I mean, if you mess up on one like level, then that can end your entire run. So right. It's always that little bit of scariness there.
Nice. Well, this sounds amazing. I picked it up while you were talking about it because I can't not have this. Yeah.
You should stream it.
Yeah.
It's a good streaming game.
Man, I really don't want people to see my thought processes as I go through this.
you can
how
watch
many
mine.
Will die?
I guarantee you 90% of what my like when I stream is me like halfway starting a sentence and then trailing off in the middle and then mousing over and just being like, this guy can hit this guy with no indication of who this guy is or who the other this guy is.
But on the other hand,
yeah. So if you like watching that, you can watch my stream.
Nice. Cool. What else have we played, Dennis?
I've been strategy gaming it up. I've also been playing Door Kickers. And this is a, I think a birthday present, or a birthday present or a Christmas present that I'm just now getting around to. And it is a strategy game where it's almost got that Monaco style visually, where it's like an architectural map. But only the places that you have line of sight to are filled in.
Yeah. It's like a top down, like SWAT game.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, SWAT it's game. Remake of Rainbow Six, right?
Very much so. Yeah. And with a name like Door Kickers, I expected it to be more tongue-in-cheek, but it's very like serious about it. So
yeah, so that's actually why what we kind of, I don't know, not scared me away, but you know, it sounded like just kind of like macho meathead shooter the game.
Yeah, and it's not like it, that the game, as far as I can read it, is unironically named Door Kickers. Like someone called it Door Kickers because they thought that sounded cool.
Right. like fuck yeah, the police. Yep.
Exactly. So it is like you said, a remake of Rainbow Six. The tactical planning layer where you're kind of, you know, you pick where your guys are going to start, and it's always like a, you know, an alley or an accessible place, and then you kind of map out how you want them to move through the house. Then you hit play and they start executing the plan. You can pause at any time to change or remake the plan as the scene unfolds. And what that led to is I honestly did not ever plan for the full house.
No.
Or the full area. I kind of planned, okay, here's how I'm going into this room. And I would hit play and get into the room and then stop, adjust that, stop. Okay, room's clear. Now I will plan the next room. And it was very, very step by step. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of a game where you are setting up like the entire thing and letting it run. Mm-hmm. However, and I think that was like what you were describing before, Ben. However, that's really not the way I wound up playing Door Kickers. You can also, however, reorient things and specifically change where your soldiers are looking at any given point without pausing the game. And I thought that felt really good to, as I'm entering a room, I don't need to full on hit pause, but I can just kind of quickly click and have a guy check a corner that I maybe forgot to plan for. And so it's got that really good on the fly feel to it when you've got the game moving. So that is a kind of a cool piece of it. I still, you know, me being me, defaulted to pausing and spending 50 minutes thinking about every single thing, but it was nice to have that option.
But that impacts your star rating at the end, right? Like how much you fiddle with it.
I think it's ultimately how much time it takes you.
Okay.
So you can spend as much unpaused time as it takes you. You can spend as much time as you want in pause thinking and planning. However, the only thing you get scored on is how long it takes you to complete the mission and whether or not you lost any people. So there is definitely an element of efficiency to it, mm-hmm. where, you know, you want to adjust your plan, but at the same time, you also want to keep everyone kind of fairly moving at a good clip, versus checking every single corner. So like I just said, instead of drawing a line that checks every single corner and has them preparing for all eventualities, it's probably easier to draw a broad strokes line and then just use the right click while the game is running to make sure you're checking all your corners.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at some of the videos for this. It also actually has a pretty cool art style.
Yeah, like I said, it's like Monaco rules.
Right, and like anything I like, anyone you kill and then don't have line of sight to gets replaced with like a chalk outline.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's totally true. It's kind of they had a very strong sense for what they wanted to do with the visual direction, and that is cool to see. There's a couple pieces that I've got complaints about. That when you try to stack people up on a door and plan how they go through together as a team, it gets a little awkward. Just everything is too close together to click on, and it's a little hard to tell exactly who's going when. I've had a couple of times now where I've been like, okay, I'm going to flashbang with this guy. Then this guy is going to go through and clear it out, or like kick in, you know, this other door and go through. And I hit play, and just immediately the second guy's like, "Wee, I'm going in," without waiting for the flashbang. And I can't quite tell what determines, because sometimes it works perfectly.
Right.
And they stack up, and it's just you pick, throw flashbang, go in, and they execute it like you would expect to see a highly trained team do. And I can't tell what I'm doing differently in the situations where it works versus where it doesn't from like a UI interface. So that's frustrating. Otherwise it's a really fun game. And like I said, I've just been completely into strategy games lately. So yeah. That's me. Any questions about Door Kickers?
No, I've played it, so I know roughly what you're talking about. I was just uncomfortable mm-hmm. with the theming, if I'm being honest.
Sure, yeah. Like I said, it's a little too unironic. Like, yeah. It's just a little, like, if there was some kind of tongue-in-cheekness, or maybe it needs to be a little bit more realistic or a little more cartoony.
Yeah.
It's in the uncanny valley of theming.
Yep. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, since you got started, what else have you been playing?
Sure. The only other thing I have is a board game. I started a board game called Gloomhaven over the weekend, which is have you heard of this? Or
this is number one on my list of board games I really want to play.
All right, yeah. So it's also
what was
number
the
one
you
on
were playing before?
The one I was playing before,
Twilight Empire.
Twilight Imperium, basically I've heard like Gloomhaven and Twilight Empire are like kind of brother and sister in the games that go on forever and weigh 300 pounds and have 600 minis kind of category.
That's pretty on point. Yeah. Gloomhaven. So it's number one on Board Game Geek right now. Basically, the easiest way to describe it is it's basically a board game version of D&D. And it's like they just manage all the campaigns for you and all the stories and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's essentially D&D. So if you really like D&D, you'll probably really like Gloomhaven. The one improvement to D&D is that it actually like track the combat is much more interesting. Instead of it just being like I attack and roll die over and over, each person has a class of characters similar to D&D. That class affects kind of what actions they can take. So when you're going through like a dungeon, you have a set of cards in your hand. So you start off, depending upon your class, it'll determine how many number of cards you start off with. It could be like 9 to 12, somewhere around there. And on every action, you play two cards. Every card has a top and bottom action, and every card also has an initiative number. So like a number based on how quickly you'll be able to do this action. Mm-hmm. And so you pick a combination of two cards, and then based on you reveal one of them for initiative, and then you pick a top and bottom action combination. The cards will have special actions. You can always default to just a move to attack for two action for the bottom and the top respectively. And that's kind of how the game plays, is you pick two cards, goes to your discard. You take a short rest action to put all the cards in your discard back to your hand.
Uh-huh.
And some of the cards give you experience. And so that's how you track experience. It's basically how many times you've like killed people with certain moves that gives you experience. And then you level up at certain points.
Yeah.
Leveling up puts new cards in your deck, and then mostly like the reason why people play it is there's like a really fleshed out world to the game,
right?
Where you know, like there's every like scenario, you open up a booklet, it's you put down a bunch of cardboard grids and you put down monsters in certain locations, and then you fight through that sort of dungeon.
A lot of text on these cards.
Yeah, there's a lot of cardboard to the game. I punched everything out one day, and then we played it, and then I had to go to the grocery store, buy a bunch of like small plastic bags so we could pack everything together, and then like sort everything out. But even then, it's still like a lot of stuff.
God, this box is huge.
Yeah, it is big, and it is also very heavy as well. But yeah, it's an interesting experience. We've only gone through maybe like four missions in it or so, which we played it like all day yesterday for like 10 hours or so. So we put a good dent in the game. I'm only playing it with two other people. It plays 1 to 4, but chose to pick people who are like most commonly like the core board game players, since they can commit like a bigger amount of time to the game. It's definitely interesting so far. I think we're going to try and play it like once a week and just try and do like a one-off scenario.
Nice.
it's interesting to see kind of like how the world evolves. In a lot of these dungeons, there will be like treasure chests at certain points. Mm-hmm. And so if you are able to get to the treasure chest and loot it, then it'll give you a random award. It could be something like experience. It could be something like money, or it could open up like a new place to go to in the world. So if this sounds interesting to you, you should look up a map of the game. It looks very similar to like a Lord of the Rings map or like a Elder Scrolls map, where there's like, it looks like it's written on parchment and there's a bunch of numbers all over the map. And there's like different locations. There's like a mountains area. There's like a desert area. There's like a lake area. And anything that has a number on it is something that you might be able to unlock through the course of the game. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of like A-B choices in the game where it'll be like you come across a stranger on the road, you can either help him or rob him, that sort of thing. And some of these choices might be like trivial and might give you gold or something like that. But some of them might open up random new locations. And then like you as a group decide where you want to go to next.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm curious with that kind of description. Is there any kind of role playing component to the game, or are you guys kind of playing it pretty straight up?
We are not role playing it, but you could if you wanted to. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a nerd.
Yeah. You're not like a cool person. No, I don't. No, you're playing a board game. It's like whatever. Everyone's nerds. That's fun.
Sailed.
It's you can role play as much as you want to into it, but you don't have to.
Right.
And that's kind of something that appeals to me. I'm very unimaginative, so I'm not good at creating new characters. I'm much more interested in the more complex combat system. So
yeah.
This is kind of like the best version of D&D for me to play.
nice.
It's been a lot of fun so far. I do like too. There's like basically a main path you can go on, and then there's already like two or three different side missions that have opened up that you can do as well. So pretty interesting. I had heard about this in passing from a couple of people like maybe a year ago or so, but yeah, I finally like looked up videos of people playing it, and then we finally got it. So it's been cool to see.
Gloomhaven.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any questions about that. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that all?
That's all I got.
Okay. I'm going to do mine. So I finished up Doom.
Ooh,
nice.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I feel like my opinions haven't really, evolved much since last, episode where I talked about it. But yeah, it is a good time. I did have to bump the difficulty down. Because mm-hmm. once I got to hell, it ended up being really, really difficult. Like just like too many enemies. So, you know, good.
Now, from what I remember, like hell is the very first place you go, isn't it?
Nah, it's like
you, does it start with you like riding an elevator down to hell?
No, like you start out waking up in that sarcophagus and you're running around Mars for a little bit before.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of Mars.
Yeah.
They're both very red. It kind of runs together.
Yeah. There's a specific moment about a third of the way through where the villain opens the portal and you're sucked through.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Once I got there, like it was a little bit rough going. I think the middle third specifically, there are some levels where like last week I complained about it kind of turning into a bit of a platformer, you know, as they're teaching you how to do the double jump.
Yeah.
And like the next level, like the first hell level, it plays an awful lot like the Zen stages in Half-Life.
Okay.
With a lot jumping around like alien geometry. It's like, this looks cool, but I'm not like that wasn't fun then. And I don't think that's terribly, terribly fun right now. But it eventually found its legs again. One thing I do want to heap some praise on, because I don't think I talked about it very much last time, was even though you do have a lot of very familiar Doom weapons in this, I love the weapon customization and upgrading that they let you mm-hmm. do. So like the idea is like, you know, a couple of times in a level, like maybe one of them will be a secret. You find like a weapon upgrade pod, and each weapon has like an option. You can pick from one of two secondary fire abilities, and all of the upgrades for those abilities, you know, kind of stem from whichever one of those you're using at the moment. So like the one that really sticks out for me is like, I will generally like a rocket launcher in a game like this. You know, they're fun to play with. Area effect is cool. And this ends up having a very satisfying rocket launcher to use, because one of the optional upgrades for that is the ability to detonate the missile in the air. So as you're shooting, you don't have to like do what you normally do with the rocket launcher, which is aim at the surface nearest where the enemy is. Instead, you can kind of like shoot it over their heads and then detonate while it's near them. And so, you know, basically, you know, you pull right trigger, count 1, 2, 3, watch the progress of it, and then left trigger like to detonate it, basically completely changing like the shape and texture of the way of the way you think about how the kind of relationship between you and the enemies, right? And for most of the weapons, there was one of the options that felt really satisfying, like the plasma rifle. Like I chose the ability to basically, as it accumulates heat, you're able to press the secondary fire to like send out a shockwave that'll like blast enemies away near you. You know, for like crowd control. And so again, taking these basic, you know, these basic ass Doom guns and, you know, kind of, let's just say elaborating on them just enough to kind of like, you know, change the pace of play and make switching around between them more meaningful than just what is the rate of fire? How quickly does the projectile move and how much damage does it do? Like you're able to specialize each weapon to like match the way that you played in different situations.
Yeah, I'm like curious, each gun's kind of its own strategy.
Yeah.
What were your go-tos on the shotgun and assault rifle?
The assault rifle, I did the scope. Because when you were zoomed in, one of the early upgrades gave the ability for bullets to pass through enemies. Nice. So I was generally using that when I was firing at mobs of enemies anyway. So like, you know, positioning yourself so that your shots are going to hit 1 or 2 or 3 people or monsters is, you know, worthwhile. For the shotgun, I did the explosive charge.
Was that the grenade launcher?
No, it's the one that like basically turns it into a little bit of like a rocket launcher itself.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
I think the only upgrade I remember from that game was the machine gun one, where it splits into like 3 parts. the Gatling gun or whatever.
Oh yeah, the Gatling gun one was fun. I went boring with that one. I got the ability to spin up the barrel without firing, just because the ammo was so limited for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't that why you have chainsaws?
I mean, it felt like no matter how much I used the chainsaw to re-up my ammo, it felt like any given single, you know, I just couldn't carry enough to do the spray and pray kind of thing.
The game is probably directing that for you too, right?
Yeah. So yeah, Doom is fun. Like, this is a surprise to nobody. You know, people have been telling me to play it for a while. I was happy to sit down. I really don't have I don't feel bad about having to switch down to easy or, you know, too young to die or whatever it is.
What did you think about the music in the game?
It was good.
Okay. All right.
it was appropriate, you know, like the chuggy metal kind of sense to it. Like, that's what I remember Doom music sounding like. So, it felt like they were kind of honoring that. It sounded like you were guiding me toward that, or guiding me.
Oh, again, it's not like a radical opinion from what everyone else has talked about the game, but it's like definitely one of the high points of the game, I thought. And did a good job of like aiding you into getting into the flow of the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other game I've been playing is Celeste.
Ooh.
Yeah. Finish that up.
Oh my gosh. How long of a game is it?
Probably like 10 hours, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. So Celeste, I talked about it a little bit last week, kind of as a preview. This is an indie game. It is a platformer, has kind of like a pixel art kind of aesthetic to it. And it is a little bit of like, it's like baby's first Masochore game. Like, this is a very difficult game. Not like I want to be the guy level, like where the hatefulness is a joke that is being played on you. But, you know, you're going to be dying frequently in this. A similar game that some people might have played might be Super Meat Boy. if you play that, you probably have a good a good idea of a little bit of what's going on with this. You die so frequently. In fact, I wrote down the number. It says at the end, I died 1,353 times.
Whoa!
But that's not a problem, because the entire game, the narrative, you know, you're playing a young woman who, you know, is kind of compelled to climb up this mountain called Celeste. And weird stuff starts happening. It's haunted. It has this this presence, and it draws out kind of darker sides of people who are there. But the entire kind of narrative is about, like, overcoming your own kind of hang-ups and anxieties about taking on something really difficult.
And you're not describing getting over it right now, right?
No. It's very strange. These came out kind of in the same, roughly the same year or so. Mm-hmm. I think getting over it's more about game design generally. This one, I think, is more human in its aim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not to say that Benefati isn't doing amazing stuff with getting over it and, you know, the human side of that as well. This is just more of a soft thing. The writing in this isn't very good. Like, I was mashing through it. I kind of wish it wasn't there. But regardless, it is a very pretty game. The music is good and the play is fun. Like, you know, so when I say, like, oh, I died 1,300 times, you know, that's me being vulnerable with you. Don't laugh at me for how bad I am at video games.
That's just saying that you came back to it 1,356 times, or
resilience, mm-hmm. I think
it's like that Japanese saying, you know, fall down 13,000 times, get up 13,001.
Yep. Mm-hmm. 13,000. You're there's a little bit of order of magnitude creep there. 1,300 times.
Well, you know.
Well, you've got some more playing to do, it sounds like.
Die 13 million times, get back up 13. Yeah.
The checkpointing in this is very generous. It's, you know, it's done by screens, you know. So you'll go through a screen's worth of obstacles and then get to the next one. If you die, you just kind of end up back at the start. The movement mechanic, or the movement hook to this, is that your character Madeline has the ability to do an air dash. So you jump and you press the shoulder button and press a direction, and you will dash in one of eight directions. It's a little bit weird that there are eight directions because it puts it in an awkward place where, like, it's kind of easy to dash in the wrong direction, like be off by 45 degrees, you know. I would say a non-trivial number of my deaths were put down to that. But again, the checkpointing is very generous, so I never felt. It never felt terrible about that. The other movement gimmick is you're able to cling to a wall and do, like, a little bit of a climb up on that. So there are, you know, there'll be long times where there is no horizontal surface for you to rest on to recharge your to recharge your air dash. You'll have to be, like, clinging to the walls, jumping over spikes, and navigating environments with your limited amount of grip that you have, you know. So the entirety of the movement in the game is all about conserving your air dash, and eventually you get a second air dash, and also your grip, so that you don't fall. And, you know, it creeps up in difficulty as it goes along. By the end, you're doing things that seem impossible, and I think where this really shines, and where a lot of, you know, difficult games like this shine, but this one especially, because it is, you know, on the friendlier side of this, is that it creates very dramatic moments where you are constantly hovering at the edge of failure. You know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, it's like, I have no idea. There's an uncertainty. I know what I need to do, but I know it's going to be difficult to do it. And then it is a constant kind of, like, flex and release of, you know, kind of achievement. Right, as you're navigating this stuff, and I think that pace is really to the game's credit, and makes it. It really led to a couple of situations, you know, several times where I'm, you know, playing this on the Switch, and I think, oh my gosh, like, I've died at this so many times. You know, put it down, get up, go to the next room, and then say, ah, but wait a minute, and then walk back, and then pick it up, and then, like, look at it, and then let me try, and then you finish it, and then you're back into it.
Yeah, that's it's really cool when a game can walk that tightrope between, mm-hmm. like, frustration and being easy.
Yes. So yeah. And that's something that I kind of learned about my relationship with difficulty in games by playing this, is that, you know, for me, prolonged, sustained perfection is not something that I want a game to ask of me. You know, like, go listen to Bonfireside Chat and listen to us talk, you know, kind of rag on Dark Souls 3 bosses that were incredibly long and basically required you to never fuck up. I don't, yeah. I don't like that. What I want is to basically get the shit beat out of me and then eke out a victory at the very last moment. Right. For me, the drama of near failure is immensely satisfying, more so than just the idea that I did something that, you know, is technically possible, but is impossible without, without a tremendous amount of kind of like input and honing and perfection. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that requires a deft touch, you know, from the designer to kind of create those situations for sustained drama as opposed to sustained perfection. Right. And so I think that Celeste is pretty successful at that. Right. One thing I don't like is there are optional items like little challenge, you know, like little challenge rooms that you can do to get strawberries. Like, those are the game's collectibles. Early on, there's like a tooltip that says, yeah, don't worry about the strawberries. Like, unless you want to brag to your friends, you know, they're not necessary. Okay, cool. So I'll take a look. Like, I'll see, like, oh, is that a strawberry? Maybe I'll try once or twice, but I won't. If the game isn't going to judge me, if it's not going to make me feel bad, then okay. And I guess this is mild spoilers, but at the very end, it it does, after the credits, make you feel bad if you didn't get a lot of strawberries, with like a story thing. Like, it's not like, and you died because you had no strawberries, but it's like, you let a bunch of people down because you didn't have strawberries. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, it's kind of bullshit.
So, I mean, ultimately, that's not that big of a not that big of a deal, but it's like, oh, don't tell me that strawberries don't matter and they make me feel bad at the end. Yeah. The other thing, so the final chapter, you can go into it, but basically it'll be locked to you unless you have discovered these four secrets that are hidden throughout the main game. And so I got to it thinking, okay, I want to finish this game, I like it a lot, and I saw, oh no, like, this will require me to go back and play the entire thing. I'm like, I am fine not playing this bonus chapter. That is that is a-okay. I'm
gonna play this one on YouTube.
It's like, okay, I was compelled through playing Cave Story to play the optional like hell dungeon at the end of it. This, no, maybe if I come back to it, possibly, but as of right now, I am comfortable saying that Celeste is in the books.
Cool.
Yeah. Any questions? I know I just kind of just talked and talked and talked there, but I like that game quite a bit.
I still, like, don't understand. I mean, I guess it's similar to me looking at Into the Breach and then playing it and having a different experience, but I just don't understand how it's, like, gotten such good reviews, and it's, like, a perfect, like, on IGN score or review for it. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. It seems like maybe I should just play it and see if it's any good.
Yeah. It's just a very well done, well-tuned platformer. Probably better on PC, especially if you play it with a I really wish that I was playing it with like a PS4 controller, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
With a just kind of like a better D-pad like that. You know, I don't know that it deserves the glowing review scores that I've seen it get. You know, who knows? It's just like a perfect, you know, like what it means for a game to be perfect. But like, yeah, the accidental, like, input and air dashes and stuff like that, like, that seems like a real tuning problem that gets in the way. And also the writing just doesn't do it for me. Like, the themes and the stuff that it explores is fine, but the actual like words that are put down are not as engaging as I think were not as engaging for me as it was for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what have we been playing?
Sure. So, I finally beat Monster Hunter.
Cool.
So,
you can beat that game? Yeah.
Well, the credits have rolled.
Yeah.
Did they shame you like they did Cole?
No, they did not shame me. So, presumably because I picked up enough monster berries or whatever.
Don't eat those.
Yeah.
That's poop.
Just got to keep the world clean.
No, that actually is something you have to pick up, because that's what you use when you're in a, you know, in a fight and some other monster decides it wants to attack you at the same time. like a monkey, you throw poop at it.
To keep it busy.
Just to have it say, yeah, maybe I'll go somewhere else and play. No, the final fight is incredibly annoying because basically you eventually one of the later stage enemies has a massive AoE ability.
Okay.
And deals a ton of damage and so can easily you know, one shot you. And in this in the last mission, you basically you'll eventually unlock like upgrade more powerful enemies called tempered enemies.
Okay.
And you basically have to fight two tempered versions of this monster.
Huh.
And so it's incredibly annoying, and in particular, it's really annoying. You basically can't pick up group the monster. Because the way the game works is on each mission, you have three lives shared among all the people playing it.
Okay.
And with this monster, since it's AoE based, like having more people just increases your chance of like two or three people getting one-shotted and instantly losing the mission.
Okay.
So the one good thing about it is that this monster is the most overtly hostile to other monsters.
Okay.
And in particular, the two you have to fight are hostile to each other. So you can very much pursue a strategy of just like luring them into each other's paths and letting them fight each other.
Hmm.
And then you can also, I at least took, you know, equipped the rifle with explosive ammo and just kind of took pot shots at them while they were doing this.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's kind of interesting. They also patched in some a weird event mission where basically you can go in and capture these little snake creatures called wigglers.
Okay.
Or one of the scientists.
They decided on that name after like a 5-hour meeting where no one was allowed to leave until they decided on a name.
Fucking wigglers.
This character in the same way that like when you research monsters, that's very much a euphemism for go kill the things.
Right, right.
This character is the head researcher for like endemic life, so basically anything that isn't a monster. So like little adorable creatures.
Right, right.
And it's very much for her research is kind of a euphemism for play with.
Bring me cute things.
Yes, yes. So it's very much like get me pets and I will give you a loot. And so the actual item you get though is basically a quote unquote like wiggler disguise. It basically replaces your helm with this like 3-foot tall, like stitched together, like kind of like snake, like mascot head. It looks a lot like the there's like the dragon head or whatever in Dead Rising.
Okay.
So it's just completely ridiculous. It's got like buttons for eyes, and it basically makes your character model like 9-foot tall, and it's got like wobble animation as you move, so it's pretty entertaining seeing like all the videos people have done like fighting the end game bosses with every member equipped with this item.
So it looks kind of like it makes you look like Chester from Syphil and Ollie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The funny thing is it's actually a fairly good item. Like it's you know, it's not going to be top tier, but it's at least like a very much an end game viable helm.
Nice. And you're gonna make some sacrifices for fashion souls, right?
Oh yeah, no, yeah. Definitely. Actually, my favorite is I unlocked a Palico outfit that is really badass. It's basically like this, you know, this super lacy, like kind of the Gothic Lolita bride's outfit.
Okay.
But it's makes your Palico's like eyes glow all ghostly style, and like all of the like veils and stuff are subtly in the shape of skulls. So like the end result is it basically makes your Palico into this kind of like ghost bride type of looking thing, and it's really badass.
Nice. Yeah, so. I'm into that.
Yeah, so that's a thing. Like, I'm interested to see because they've said they intend to support it, and this is kind of like the ideal game where like just throwing in an expansion where it's like, yeah, we're just gonna throw some more random monster bosses in there is like the ideal thing.
just high level, like what would be raid play in a different game,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. So like I know they've all but confirmed that I guess one of the like kind of fan favorite bosses from the previous game is going to be the next one to add, which is the devil whatever boss.
I have no idea. I have no basis.
Yeah, I have no idea. And I'm kind of hoping, although I've been told that the actual gameplay to support this wasn't so great, but I am sort of hoping that maybe they'll add in the underwater stages they had in previous games.
Hmm. Oh yeah, like in the Wii U one, I think that was the big deal.
Yeah, yeah. So, because like I guess the previous games have actually been much bigger than this one, is my understanding. And so it sort of sounds like maybe they're, have some commitment to like, you know, they're now going to, you know, be supporting it for a while. So that seems kind of cool.
Nice.
So,
yeah. What ended up being your primary weapon through the end game?
So I actually switch up a fair amount. Usually my go-to was either dual blades or sword and shield.
Okay.
The one thing though, and this is what there are some things with the control scheme I'm still not entirely happy with.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is in particular, those are the two by far lowest range weapons, and that can make any sort of flying enemy fights incredibly frustrating.
Right, because you're waiting for them to be vulnerable.
Right, exactly. And it's a thing where like a significant portion of the game involves, in particular if you're a DPS character, like a lot of strategy it revolves around like clipping things that, you know, like basically, you know, clipping the enemy's tail or stuff like that. And a lot of times you just aren't tall enough to do that with those weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, like with the shield, you know, that doesn't work, you know, nearly as well with, you know, blocking and stuff when the enemy is just running all over the place attacking different people.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like some of the weapons don't work quite as well with multiplayer.
Yeah.
So the other thing I've been doing is the bow guns a lot. Light bow guns kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. No, that's one that's like a rapid fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Bow and arrow is actually a really cool weapon, but I am just completely incompetent with it.
No, I'm not laughing at your incompetence. I'm just laughing that you characterized yourself as incompetent.
No. But that it you basically it replaces your dodge with sort of a like Bloodborne style kind of like you know
like a step.
Yeah. But the thing is, while like for just a brief fraction of a second after that, or like as you're quick stepping, you deal increased damage. So a lot of the gameplay revolves around being able to like track your target as you're moving around.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and similarly, it's got a lot of like special shots. So like it has an explosive shot with a large timer and you know things like that. So yeah. I'm no good at it, but it's very cool.
Sounds very demanding.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's a number of ones. There's a basically a rocket spear you can get that the people that are good at with it, like against the previously mentioned flying enemies, can basically stay airborne indefinitely fighting them.
How does that work?
So basically the way it works is it's use it like a bow staff, and you can like do kind of a pole vault to jump in the air. And then you have, while you're in the air, you can do a like directional kind of like rocket blast double jump and a rocket blast into a slash. Okay. But so you can basically double or jump another two times, but if you hit an enemy, your counter resets. So as long as you keep hitting the enemy, you can keep like blasting back and forth in the air.
Okay.
So
is there a term for this yet?
I do not know. I feel like there should be.
Monster juggling.
There is the other crazy weapon they have actually is the hunting horn, which is basically a giant two-handed club, or like basically a giant two-handed bagpipe that instead of like you know blowing into it like a bagpipe, you apparently press the key and then hit a monster with it.
And the idea is that the music buffs enemies around you. It's like a way to play as a bard.
Right, exactly. And the apparent technical term is duting.
Duting? Like you dute like a trumpet? Like when you see Mr. Skeletal?
Yes, it is. It is the community has apparently decided that it shall be known as the dute horn. But it's you know, it's kind of funny because it's by far the least popular weapon. But if you have someone on your team that can use it, you'll just roll through enemies.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's a interesting game.
Well, congratulations on beating it. Did you have anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. So now I'm figuring out... I don't know what's going to be next. I'll have to figure something out. So
yeah, cool. Well, do you all want to button it up?
Let us button.
The credit. It's been a big week. We played a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that was a hefty grind.
Yeah. So thank you everybody for listening to level number 233. We really appreciate it. This isn't related to this show, but I want to draw people's attention to the Twitch channel and the YouTube channel. So on Twitch, I do the survival horror streams on the weekend, and also do the JRPG streams, playing Breath of Fire 3 right now. Still currently thinking about what's going to come next. But those are all archived at youtube.com/duckfeedtv. Specifically, I've started making a condensed version of the JRPG Let's Play. So if you want to see Breath of Fire 3, but without the random battles, without wandering around dungeons and stuff, just the story,
creme de la creme.
Yeah, the story, the boss fights, and the commentary, then look for those to go up. Those are Cole Playing Games condensed, KPG condensed. To give you an idea, I took the first two episodes, which totaled to 3.5 hours of video, on the stream archive version of it. Got it down to an hour and a half. Nice. People seem to like it, so I want to draw more people's attention to it. Yeah. Cool. Otherwise, for this show, if you would like to help us out, you can leave us a rating or review on iTunes. In addition to liking us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. For as many times as I've said that over my life, why do I still trip over it?
There's a lot of L's. There's a lot of L's.
A lot of L's. I think you're right. of course, tell your friends if you can. Did I forget anything?
I think that covers it.
Okay. So thank you so much. I am Cole Ross, and you can find me at on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I am Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter and GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I am David Meismith, and you cannot find me, for I am a master of camouflage.
I'm Ben Merkel, and I'm at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got some stuff?
I have a few.
I do.
Okay.
So,
good. Go ahead, David.
Sorry, a number of these are maybe going to need to be cut down, but I had go away, Neo, you're Ninja Gaiden at best. Or maybe just you're Ninja Gaiden at best.
Okay. Yeah, I like you're Ninja Gaiden at best. Yeah.
Melody and the White Noise, which if nothing else would be a great name for a like cyberpunk novel.
Melody in the White Noise?
Yes.
Yeah.
That may not have made the recording, BT Dubs.
Oh, good point.
Oh no, it did.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's yeah, got a hook and only a hook.
No, that did not.
That did not?
No, that one got. That one got cut off.
Okay. Not here, but an English speaking not here.
Oh god. Yeah, get my xenophobia out there, Front Street.
Yo, you and Skullface. and building size mechs versus mountain size bugs.
Okay. Dennis.
I have several as well, and I don't think any repeats, which is crazy. Huh. I had writing prompts for the Musically Inclined. I had Prince Flesh Swallow.
Sorry. He caught me off guard.
I had the Uncanny Valley of theming. I had Flex and Release.
Okay. Mm.
Which was used describing the kind of tension Celeste. In Celeste.
Yeah.
But in isolation from context, I thought it was pretty good. And then Monster Berries.
Ben?
I only have one. I have David.
What? Was I really aggressive when I segued to David?
I wrote it down. So pass me says yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It could have been too aggressive. You would have remembered it.
The only one that I have is They'll Bounce Back, but I forget what that was in relation to.
Oh, it was Grappling Hooks versus Pogo Sticks. Grappling Hooks versus Pogo Sticks ain't bad either.
I like Prince Flesh Swallow an awful lot.
I'm down.
Are we good? See, like, yeah, that one rides the edge, right? Like that. You know, like obviously we're laughing because of the sexual, but like I mean, it could also be like he's a cannibal. I think that's noble. What's that?
But he's noble as well.
Yeah. Okay, Prince Flesh Swallow. It is.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool. It's late. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Have a
finally
good night.
We can get some level fan fiction now.
Please don't. No. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Night, guys.
Bye.
See you.